From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As we hit the dog days of August, baseball fans everywhere are settling into the late summer routine. Muggy nights of fly balls, tough calls, and home runs. Pennant races heat up, old rivalries flare again, and everyone roots for the home team. But in Latin America, baseball is more than a pastime. In the dreams of millions, it's the way out of poverty. Young players from the Caribbean are full of hunger for the game, for a better life, for a major league contract. One country in particular, little Dominican Republic, has become the Caribbean factory of baseball dreams and thousands of players under contract. But for every signed player, there are oceans of boys left behind. The system that plays on their dreams and poverty can be heartbreaking, sometimes life-threatening. Tonight on Point, the Latin American field of dreams, young Dominican players, and the lure of the major league. What does it mean that the American game relies so heavily on poor boys from one island nation? Is this the beauty of globalization or the ugly side of the global business of sport? And do you want to know what goes on beyond the peanuts and Cracker Jacks? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New Haven, Connecticut, is Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria, Sterling Professor of Hispanic and Comparative Literature at Yale University. He's the author of a number of books of literary criticism, as well as The Pride of Havana, A History of Cuban Baseball. Good evening and welcome, Professor Gonzalez Echevarria.
Good evening, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. Also with us from San Francisco is Stephen Feneru, sports writer for The Washington Post and co-author of The Duke of Havana, Baseball, Cuba, and the Search for the American Dream. It's been a long time. Good to have you, Stephen Feneru.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be here.
You've both got Cuba in your book titles, but it's the Dominican Republic that's in the headlines lately. Just this week on the op-ed page in the New York Times, Professor Gonzalez Echevarria, you're writing about the American dream as a Dominican nightmare. You write about rapacious baseball entrepreneurs preying on young Dominican boys or young men. What's the problem with the way the system's working? We see Pedro Martinez and Sammy Sosa and Vladimir Guerrero and all the rest, and it looks pretty good under the bright lights of the stadium, Professor. What's the problem back in the Caribbean?
Well, those bright lights blind us, and the glitter of Major League Baseball blind us to the realities back in Latin America, and how for every Pedro Martinez, there are thousands of boys pining to become Major League ball players. The problem is not just those who don't get signed, but even those who are signed by the droves to play in baseball academies, in summer leagues, to develop their talents. But out of thousands, perhaps one will become a star, while the others are left behind, not only with shattered dreams, but also with nowhere to go and no prospects of making a living.
Steve Feneru, there are an awful lot of American kids who would like to be Major League Baseball players, too. And, of course, a very tiny percentage of them do. What's so different about what's going on in the Dominican Republic?
Well, I think what's the biggest difference is the way the market works. In the United States, if a player players in the United States, prospects in the United States, anyone who is interested in becoming a major league ball player is subject to the major league draft, which is a regulated system by which, you know, the player enters the draft and then the team drafts that player, and then the player can negotiate only with that team. In the Dominican Republic and in other countries, it's a free agent system by which the players can sign with anybody. And on its face, that's not necessarily problematic. It's the unregulated nature of the market in the Dominican and in other countries that creates a lot of the problems. The players are very susceptible to middlemen and street agents who help broker these deals and effectively connect the players with the major league teams. And as the business has grown down there, there have been a variety of abuses that have surfaced, everything from extortion of players, threats involving players, players being ripped off for their signing bonuses. And, of course, the signing bonuses are a lot lower in the Dominican, partially because of the nature of the market and partially because of just the nature of the way baseball works in the Dominican.
And some of the examples of the desperation with that kids feel there to make the grade are pretty harrowing. We read about animal steroids being shot up, a couple of Dominican young men, boys, who died taking the drugs, trying to buff up that way a couple of years ago. Steve Finner, before we look at the system and how it works, give us a sense of how on earth has it come to pass that so many young men from this one small country are in American Major League Baseball. 25% of players under contract, we read, from the Dominican Republic, and these, you know, extraordinarily famous and talented guys at the very top. We mentioned a bunch, but there are more. Alfonso Soriano with the New York Yankees, Manny Ramirez, of course, with the Red Sox, and Miguel Tejada, the Oakland Athletics, not to mention Pedro and Sammy and Vladimir Guerrero. How did one small country come to put out such a stream of super talented baseball players?
Well, it's a variety of factors. I mean, the most prominent is the level of passion for baseball in the Dominican Republic and the number of young boys who are playing the sport on in the country. When you go there, there's really not a vacant patch of ground in the country that is not occupied by players who are in training, you know, kids who are between 12 and 15 years old who are in training to try to become Major League Baseball players. That said, the other biggest factor is obviously money. For Major League teams, it's just much cheaper, increasingly cheaper, to sign players out of the Dominican and in other Latin American countries. And so you have the combination of these two factors. And then, of course, there's Cuba, which is effectively, except for players who defect, the island is essentially cut off because of the political situation. So there's a huge supply of talent that, because of the political situation, is cut off, basically cut off from Major League Baseball, except for players who defect. And so increasingly Major League teams have focused their attention on the island. And because of the salary structure in the United States, because of the draft and the expense that's required in signing some of these American players, I mean, you can sign 30 players in the Dominican Republic for what it would take to sign a number one draft pick in the United States. And so teams like a lot of American companies are gravitating to cheaper labor, and that's what's happening.
Which makes it sound like just part of a kind of globalized economy, in this case on the baseball front. Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria, put us inside the mind of a young Dominican boy who's looking out at the world. He sees the same big stars that Americans do. Do those boys think they really have that chance? Is that just the kind of eternal romance of big sport? Is this like basketball hoop dreams in the American inner city for some black Americans? Is it comparable to that?
Well, I wanted to add to the reasons mentioned for the passion for baseball in the Dominican Republic. The fact is that there is no competition from other sports as there is in this country. I mean, basketball and the other sports are played, but essentially in the Caribbean, kids play baseball all year round because of the weather, and also because of the absence of the other sports. In addition to that, also the absence of a strong educational system, which is at the root of all of this, that allows for the kids to be devoting all of their attention to sports and to baseball. Now, I don't think that the dreams of a Dominican or a Cuban kid are any different than those of an American kid. I mean, all of us when we're children, we have these dreams of becoming a baseball player, an airline pilot, or something glamorous like that. Mm. So I don't think that there is that much of a difference. The difference is not in the dream. The difference is in the reality. That is the reality within which an American kid develops and lives his life, and the reality in which a Dominican kid develops and spends his life. I think that is the main difference, not the dream.
Steve Finnerow, you write about the attention this is getting in the United States these days. Just a month ago, New York Governor George Pataki calling for Major League Baseball to change the way it deals with players from the Dominican Republic and drug testing in particular. What's got this heated up right now?
Well, I think part of it was some stories that we did in the Post on the widespread use of veterinary substances by prospects in the Dominican to enhance performance and to help make them stronger to try to sign contracts with major league teams that I think many believe highlights the level of desperation that exists in the Dominican right now.
Dominican kids are using veterinary drugs, veterinary steroids, you're saying?
Steroids and dietary supplements primarily that can be purchased over the counter in the Dominican Republic.
And are they not subject to the same drug testing that an American high school or college player would be?
They are not. The great majority of minor league players in the United States are subject to a drug testing program that was developed and implemented by Major League Baseball unilaterally. Major League Baseball, for various reasons, has not chosen to drug test in the Dominican Republic, even though it operates a minor league system both in the Dominican and in Venezuela. They believe that there are cost issues involved. They also believe that the system they have in place should effectively act as a deterrent to players who are like that, who are at entry level or are in entry level leagues, and know that they'd be subject to testing if they move up to, you know, to the next level.
We spoke earlier today, Steve, with Rafael Perez, who's the head of the Major League Baseball office in Santo Domingo. And he was pushing back against the notion of widespread use of animal steroids. He said that the number that's out there, maybe it's your number, of 70% is probably exaggerated. So the real issue here is just one of drug use, education about drug abuse.
Yeah, you know, I don't in terms of percentages, I mean, there were players quoted in our stories who said that some people said that it could be 50%, some people said that it could be 70%. One guy said that it's nearly everyone. I think it's like steroid use in the major leagues. No one really has any idea. Ken Caminiti said that 50% of all players in the major leagues are using steroids. Now, I don't think anybody really knows whether that number is accurate. I think what's important is that the use is widespread. There is no question in my mind after spending weeks in the Dominican Republic that prospects are using in great numbers veterinary substances that they purchase over the counter to try to enhance their performance. You know, whether the percentages are as high as some of the players say they are, you know, I really have no idea. It's almost impossible task to know. Mm. But whether the figures are widespread, I personally do not have any doubt that there is widespread use down there.
Professor Gonzalez Echevarria, what about it? Do you believe that the use of drugs is so high in the Dominican Republic? Are these kids willing to do anything to make the passage?
It seems that way. I don't think drug testing is the answer. It's a Band-Aid to a huge problem. And the problem is the desperation that the kids feel. That is, what is the source of the anguish and the despair that leads these young people to use such drugs to enhance their performance? I'm sure that drug testing would deter some, but I think their desire is such that still some would linger. So I think that what has to be addressed is the source, that is the poverty, the destitution, and the desperation that these kids feel and that leads them to such a predicament.
Well, there it is. We're going to come back and look at exactly how the system works in the Dominican Republic, how young Dominicans are picked up, brought into baseball, brought into the academy system, and end up under the lights of American baseball stadiums. My guests tonight are Steve Finnerow, sports writer for The Washington Post, and from Yale University, Professor Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria. You can join the conversation as well. Is Major League Baseball the golden road or the golden meat grinder for young Dominicans? And does American Major League Baseball give back to the Dominican Republic more than it takes in wounded lives and dreams? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the strange and overwhelming impact of American Major League Baseball on one little island nation, the Dominican Republic. You can join the conversation. What does it mean that the American game relies so heavily on poor boys from one Caribbean island? Is this the beauty of globalization or the ugly side of the business of sport? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria, professor of Hispanic and Comparative Literature at Yale University, from San Francisco by Steve Fainer, who's sports writer for The Washington Post, and now from Bloomington, Indiana, by David Fidler. He's professor of law at Indiana University and co-author of Stealing Lives, The Globalization of Baseball and the Tragic Story of Alexis Quiroz. Good evening and welcome, David Fidler.
Thank you.
Put this in the context of Major League Baseball as a global business for us, David Fidler. How do you see the feeder tube that runs up from the Dominican Republic? Put it in business terms.
Well, it's important to understand that the way the system operates in the Dominican Republic, and we also need to include Venezuela in that as well, because Venezuela is also a pipeline of foreign talent to Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. You have to sort of see the importance of these markets for baseball labor as part of the overall economic system of baseball. And once you start thinking about it in terms of the globalization of a business, the way in which the major league teams operate in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela makes sense. It's been our experience in working on the book Stealing Lives that a lot of people have trouble thinking about baseball as a business, as a multinational business. They have.
We think of the Wurlitzer and the lights and the crack of the ball.
Yeah, well, they think about the game on the field. They don't think about the game behind the game.
So paint that picture for us. What's that look like?
Well, as Steve Fainer was saying earlier, you have to sort of think about these in terms of markets. And the globalization of baseball is really a combination of two phenomena. The first is Major League Baseball reaching out beyond the borders of the United States to try to increase the consumers of their product, baseball games, licensed merchandise, things of that nature.
I mean, to propagate it to other countries around the world.
Yes, to increase the consumer base for the products that they mm-hmm. make. Like any corporation would do that. If your national market is stagnating, you're going to look overseas to increase your consumer base, to mm-hmm. increase your revenue, mm-hmm. et cetera. The other phenomenon of the globalization of baseball is, again, reaching out beyond the national territory of the United States for labor. And here again, most multinational corporations are looking overseas for cheaper sources of labor. And Steve Fainer has already walked you through the market of how that operates in terms of the Dominican Republic and Venezuela. So, again, trying to increase the global consumption of the product, at the same time reducing the cost of producing the product, yields more profit.
But I'm looking at Pedro Martinez, $15 million salary, Sammy Sosa, $16 million, on down the list, Vladimir Guerrero, $11.5 million. This doesn't sound like, Indonesians making Nike running shoes.
Well, but part of the free agency issue and the high salaries paid to prominent free agents in the United States has been part of the way in which the system has operated since the late 1970s in driving Major League Baseball to look for foreign talent elsewhere. Pedro Martinez may make a lot of money now, but in the overall period of time in which he's been in the major leagues, it's probably the case that he was a cheaper investment than a U.S. player drafted in the first round of the amateur draft. So, again, that fits into the way in which the overall economic system of baseball works, and a lot of people don't understand that foreign aspect of it. They're concerned about salary caps or these other types of issues without understanding that the economic system is actually one which operates on a global basis.
So when you talk about stealing lives, are you talking about Dominican players in the majors who are underpaid, or are you talking about the others, sort of big wave that tries to get in through the door and doesn't?
Well, Stealing Lives is tells the story of a Venezuelan teenager who doesn't make it. Everybody knows the story of Sammy Sosa or Pedro Martinez or Vladimir Guerrero, the guys that make it. It's sort of the classic rags-to-riches story, and everybody's happy, and everybody loves Sammy. And it looks, from the point of view of the average baseball fan, like the Latin participation in the game is nothing but positive. What has never been done before is nobody's told the story of somebody who doesn't make it. What happens to that individual as he goes through the system of a baseball academy in the Dominican Republic? And we tell the story of Alexis Quiroz, who suffers a humiliating experience as a minor league player with the Chicago Cubs.
So why is that different from a young American man who you know, does the Stations to the Cross and doesn't make it either?
Well, I think a key thing, and this goes back to something that Steve Fainter was talking about, is in the sense that historically speaking, the market in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela has been unregulated. And Major League Baseball has rules that they put in place for the operation of minor league operations in the United States. Those rules don't apply in the minor league operations that exist in Venezuela and the Dominican Republic. The only official Major League Baseball rule that exists that regulates the free agency market in Dominican Republic and in Venezuela is the so-called 17-year-old rule. And as everybody knows, Major League Baseball teams historically have violated routinely the 17-year-old rule. There are no other rules. There are no official Major League Baseball rules and haven't been historically for standards for the living conditions in these academies. And that's something that we tell in the story of Alexis Quiroz, how he really has to live in inhumane conditions at the baseball facility in the Dominican Republic.
Steve Fineroo, fill that picture in for us. You've written a lot about the conditions there as well. These are called baseball academies, but they're not academies in an academic sense.
No, they are basically, I mean, I compare them to maquiladoras, which are, sort of over the border, across the border.
Car factories and all
right,
the rest. Car,
the places where the American companies operate across the border for various reasons to use cheaper labor. And, they are mechanisms by which the major league teams are able to bring in large numbers of prospects, work them out in the country without the cost of bringing them to the United States, and essentially sort through the players who are prospects and are not. And, it's interesting. You raised the issue of Martinez and Sosa and those guys, and I think those cases are actually very instructive because Sammy Sosa signed his contract. I believe he signed his original contract for $3,500.
Wow.
And, he went through the academy process. You know, he had to get through the Dominican, and then he got to the United States. And it wasn't until much later in his career that he was able to make the amount of money that he's making now. And, I think that we're all happy about that. The system is enriching the game. I mean, I don't think we should kid ourselves. I mean, the number of Latin players in the United States now are transforming Major League Baseball before our eyes, and they are enriching the sport.
Transforming it in what dimension, Steve?
They're bringing a completely different dimension. I mean, we're seeing players like Sosa, Vladimir Guerrero, Pedro Martinez. I mean, I watched Pedro pitch last night against the A's. I mean, the guy is fantastic. I mean, these are really talented players. But that doesn't mean that we should ignore the way the market works and the way that they're brought to the United States. I mean, I don't think you're making any kind of a statement about the contribution that Latin players are making and the way that in Major League Baseball and the way and the contributions that these players are making simply by pointing out that the system that brings them to Major League Baseball is vastly different than the way Americans are treated.
Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria, what about the academy system in the Dominican Republic? It's described here as though it's some sort of awful concentration camp. Is it that bad?
Well, I have to go by what Fainaru and Fiddler say. They're more knowledgeable in this than I am. But I wanted to say that I don't think that the presence of the Latin players is enriching the game in the sense that it is making it different. I think that, on the contrary, the globalization of baseball means the homogenization of baseball. That is, the Latin style of play is being abandoned in favor of a more standard style applied through this global system that includes the academies, where the players are taught to play the game in the American way. I'm not trying to diminish the accomplishments and the personalities of people like Pedro Martinez or Vladimir Guerrero, but all I'm saying is that they used to be a different Latin way of playing baseball that is disappearing. And the same is happening, I think, with Japan and other countries. And eventually, baseball will be played the same way everywhere.
Describe that Latin style of baseball. What do you mean by that?
Well, the Latin style of play was a more astute inside game, bunt, hit and run, steal bases. The pitchers threw more junk because of the lack of huge pitchers who could throw 100 miles an hour. So it was a different game in that sense. It wasn't flashy as we are led to believe here in this country. It was really just a wiser sort of approach to the game. And this, I think, is being lost now. It's a home run and the pitchers who throw 100 miles an hour everywhere.
So there's homogenization in your view, but your larger call, your larger charge is, you say baseball must stop exploiting Latino talent. And I'm still searching for exactly where the exploitation lies. These are people who want to play in the major leagues. Major League Baseball reaches out and brings them up. They may not. Is it all about the signing bonuses not being the same as they are for American players? They're underpaid, or is it a broader exploitation?
I think that David Fiddler just put his finger on it, comparing these academies to those factories abroad where American companies exploit cheap labor. I mean, I think we have to focus on those who don't make it, the hundreds who don't make it and who play in the academies, and move away from the stars who are making all those millions. I mean, we create a few multimillionaires at the expense of thousands of impoverished kids.
I mean, that's been the major message that we've tried to send in writing the book that we did, in the sense that when Major League Baseball goes to recruit in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, we have no problem with the Major League Baseball trying to globalize its sources of labor. What we have a problem with are practices such as the following. I mean, Major League Baseball recruited in Latin American countries for nearly a century, and the first time they put together a Spanish language standard form contract for Spanish-speaking players to sign was in the summer of 2001. Now, that wasn't by accident. I mean, how hard could it have been to translate a standard form contract from English into Spanish so that the players that you're signing can actually read it? That was intentional on the part of Major League Baseball teams, because that gave them flexibility to do with the players what they want. The players didn't know what their rights were under the contract, et cetera. The fact that there aren't any major official Major League Baseball rules regulating the quality of living conditions in these baseball academies. So on the one hand, you have some teams like the Dodgers who have very, you know, fine facilities, and on the other hand, you have facilities such as the ones that Alexis Quiroz suffered through with the Chicago Cubs.
What kind of conditions were there, more specifically there?
Inadequate housing, lack of running water, inadequate food, not enough water to drink during the training sessions, no properly trained medical trainer on staff. So, for example, when Alexis Quiroz suffers a serious injury, he's not provided with proper medical treatment. I mean, you can the story of Alexis Quiroz is all of these different ways in which there's intentional exploitation and discrimination taking place against these kids that play in the academy. And the system is so uneven because there aren't any standards. And our argument has been that in this process of globalization, there have to be some basic minimum standards that the commissioner's office needs to put in place and needs to enforce to make sure that reaching out and bringing in this talent pool is done in a humane and non-discriminatory fashion.
Steve Finneru, what's in the pipeline or on the books in terms of regulations along those lines? Is Major League Baseball open to globalizing the way it does business, or is that just not on?
Are they open to regulating the business?
Well, to standardizing the way they deal with players and prospective players globally.
Well, there was some movement toward implementing a worldwide draft, which some people believe would go a long way toward cleaning up a lot of the problems in Latin America. I'm personally not so sure about that, but that proposal, my understanding, has effectively been tabled. So, and then with regard to other issues such as drug testing, standardized academies, I mean, I would never, ever go so far as to say that these academies are like concentration camps. I mean, I've been to, you know, dozens of them. And,
you know, they run the gamut. Some of them are not very good and have very few showers and have very, you know, no air conditioning and lack of running water. And some of them are actually quite good, and that the standards are very high. And I think it depends on the individual team. You know, baseball did a survey over the last 2 years of all the academies and then submitted recommendations, and they've yet to implement that. So I think the jury is still out. But I would say, you know, in response to your question, which I think is a very good one and a very valid one, which where specifically is the exploitation, that it's – I can give you one – well, let me give you two examples, and I'll try to keep them short. Hmm. One is I wrote a story about a guy who had signed a contract with the Los Angeles Dodgers for $1.2 million. His name was Willie Ibar.
Mm-hmm.
He was taken into – he trained under a street agent in a city called Bani. He couldn't read or write. The agent trained him, brought him in, worked him out, and finally negotiated the contract with the Dodgers and then ripped him off for his entire signing bonus.
Which was how much, Steve?
Which was, well, the signing bonus was $1.2 million, and it was given out in two installments. And the first installment was, I believe, was after taxes, something like $490,000.
Now, I read that story of yours,
yeah.
And this street agent, or Buscano, I guess they're called in Dominican Republic, Enrique Soto, worked with Willie Ibar for 3 years or so before he got that contract. I mean, it wasn't as though he didn't invest anything in this.
This is where it gets very complicated, I think. And, you know, the question is, so what can be done about that issue and what should be done? Now, Major League Baseball would take the position that that's not our problem. We cannot regulate a whole army of people who are involved in training these athletes. As Professor Gonzalez Echevarria pointed out, the educational system in the Dominican Republic is extremely flawed at best, and that there are no opportunities to play what we would call high school baseball here in the States. And so the Buscones serve basically as the training ground for these players. But if you have widespread abuses by these individuals, the question then becomes, does the industry as a whole have a responsibility to try to prevent that from happening? Major League Baseball is dealing directly with these people. They are brokering these deals. They are the power behind the market in the Dominican Republic. So what could baseball do? Their options, as I see them, are, could they blacklist people like Enrique Soto, who are ripping off, you know, 15 and 16-year-old kids once they sign their contracts, or do they just ignore it?
Steve Finner, hold that thought. We've got to take a short break. I want to come right back and look at solutions like that one. We're talking tonight about American dreams and baseball nightmares in the Dominican Republic with Steve Finneru, David Fidler, and Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria. You can join the conversation as well. Is baseball the opium of young Dominicans or their godsend? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Support for this. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about American dreams and baseball nightmares in the Dominican Republic. You can join our conversation. What does it mean that the American game relies so heavily on poor boys from one poor Caribbean island? 25% of major league players under contract from the Dominican Republic. And is it worse for the Dominican kid than for the kid on your block who doesn't make the majors? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight, Steve Faneru, sports writer for the Washington Post, joining us from San Francisco. Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria from Yale University, author of The Pride of Havana, A History of Cuban Baseball, and from Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. David Fidler, professor of law there and co-author of Stealing Lives, The Globalization of Baseball and the Tragic Story of Alexis Quiroz. David Fidler, give us a little more. Steve Faneru was talking about the Buscones, the street agents. How does that work? What's the industry like? What's the dynamic of how these fishers of baseball players work in the Dominican Republic?
Well, part of it, you know, goes again to the way in which the market has developed there. You know, originally a Buscón would have a sort of a monogamous relationship with one particular team. That's a situation that Alexis Quiroz had in the story that we tell in our book.
That's with one American team, and he would be out as a scout for them.
Yeah, it's sort of as a quasi scout, but sort of an independent contractor. But the way the system has changed, as Steve Fainer mentioned, in the because the business has gotten much bigger, is this the Buscón sort of become much more independent and sort of become brokers of talent to major league teams. And that, from the major league team point of view, is great for efficiency, because it means you have to hire less scouts. You have people bringing talent to you. You can make these informal payments to the Buscones, and it helps you access talent on a more efficient basis. And the whole incentive structure, as Steve said, is driven by the fact that it's the major league teams offering these kids the opportunity to sign a minor league contract with the team. So the responsibility of Major League Baseball is quite significant in how this Buscone system has developed, and it's unacceptable for Major League Baseball to argue that it has no responsibility for that. It does. Now, the Dominican government also has responsibility for that, and Arturo Marcano and I have argued repeatedly that the Dominican government also needs to take responsibility. But sort of the ghost in the machine of all of this is that globalization of the business of baseball, which is controlled and operated by the commissioner's office and the major league teams.
The ghost in the machine, meaning that this is the sort of animating spirit that...
They've set up the incentive structure. They benefit from the way in which the Buscone system works. And then when there are problems, it's not acceptable for them to wash their hands and say it's somebody else's problem.
But is the major downside in this system of street agents of the Buscone that Steve Fainer talks about a story in which the guy runs off with almost $500,000 signing bonus? Or is it somehow in the way... Is it that they're taking money out of the accounts, the hands of players who ultimately make it to the major leagues, or that they're somehow exploiting kids along the way to that point?
Well, I think it's a whole range of things. And again, for us, the whole system operates in such a wild, wild west fashion that you may, on the one hand, have some Buscones who take very good care of the children that are under their charge, and you've got other Buscones who are really out for just to get their cut of the signing bonus, and then they cut loose the kids that they've been dealing with. The issues that Steve has been writing about in connection with the use of animal steroids, I mean, some of that use of those animal steroids is being encouraged by Buscones who want to, you know, get their kid to get a bigger signing bonus so they can take their cut. So in a sense, it goes back to this, the sense that this is an unregulated system. When you have an unregulated system where there's this kind of money involved in a context, as Professor Gonzalez Echeverria has emphasized, in a context of poverty, you've got a recipe for exploitation, and that's what's happening.
Roberto Gonzalez Echeverria, you write about American baseball as a kind of lethal hallucinogenic, in your phrase, for Dominican boys, young men there. So how could it be cleaned up? Is there a way that this great big global sport, this big American sport, can live side by side with the Dominican Republic and its population and its talented players? Can dip into that pool of talent and bring it to the States to play without being exploitative? What would it be?
A globalization really means Americanization. And the fact is that, as I say in the piece, the baseball traffics in American values. It portrays itself as the quintessence of American life, the anthem before every game, God bless America in the seventh inning, military jets flying overhead. So, good, but if it's going to peddle those values, it should live up to them, not only here in this country, but elsewhere. And that is really my point, that if baseball is going to become global, meaning American, then American values, as they apply here, should apply everywhere. Now, how that can be implemented is, of course, very complicated. And it will vary from the Dominican Republic to a place like Japan, where the circumstances, economic and social and so forth, are very different. But something must be done from the commissioner's office to, as David Fidler says, you know, make standard American business practices apply, not just in the United States, but elsewhere just as well.
We Arturo Marcano and I have argued that there are five basic principles which should guide reform of the system. The first is democratization. The way Major League Baseball operates, I mean, it's almost as secretive as the CIA. They've got to reach out and bring in more stakeholders, which are affected, communities which are affected by the decisions that they make. Second has got to be centralization. The way that, as Steve Fainaro pointed out, the way the system operates now is sort of unregulated. They need to centralize that with more control and guidance and leadership from the commissioner's office. Third, harmonization. They need to apply the same standards that they apply to minor league baseball in the United States to minor league operations in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela. Fourth principle is specialization. There are going to be instances, because of the peculiar context in the Latin American countries, where you need to have special rules. The Buscone system is a classic example of that. You've got to deal with that problem because that's a problem that exists in Latin America and doesn't exist in the United States. And the fifth and final principle is implementation. They've got to put these rules into place and then be serious about implementing them and enforcing them against major league teams. The history of the 17-year-old rule is a warning that even when a rule gets put into place, if there isn't the backbone to enforce and implement that rule from the commissioner's office, it isn't going to matter.
So there's a long list of things that could be done. Steve Fainaro, do you see any of that unfolding, any of that happening?
I think baseball is at a juncture right now where it's sort of being, well, I don't know about fourth, but I think it's having to confront some of these issues just by the mere fact that the business itself has become so huge down there. But, you know, as somebody who's spent a lot of time down there, I have to be honest, you know, it's really an almost indescribably messy business down there. And, you know, whether, like, real reform is going to take place, I don't really know. There's only, I mean, in defense of Major League Baseball, you know, I think that there is a lot that Major League Baseball could do down there if they wanted to. But, you know, how effective they can actually be really remains to be seen. I'll give you one example. You know, with the Buscone system, it's this huge problem, and teams were sort of, the Buscones were double dipping. I mean, they were taking cuts from the teams, and then they were taking cuts from the players, you know, to sort of double their bonus at signing. And so the teams, that's a violation of major league rules, because you're not supposed to be able to pay an agent. There's not supposed to be any payment between the agent and the team. The agent takes his percentage from the player.
And in the States, this would be 3-5% down there. It's much more.
It's much, much higher. It's 4-5% here in the States, and in the Dominican, no one knows what the average is, but it's over 25%. But the teams, but the Buscones, in addition to that, were also taking money from the team. Mm-hmm. And so the commissioner's office issued an edict that teams could no longer do that. So what's happened is now the teams are paying the players, and then some are cutting side deals with the Buscones with the understanding that the Buscone is supposed to get X number of dollars. Mm-hmm. But what's happened is, because there's not separate checks now, you've got all kinds of disagreements between the players and the Buscone, the Buscone and the teams. Buscone is threatening players because they haven't received what they believe is their cut. I mean, I can't tell you how many Buscones down there complained to me about teams that they weren't getting the money that had been promised to them, that they weren't getting the money from the players. The players, I mean, I think, and I know a lot of scouts are worried about this because their players are being threatened, you know, and it's a very volatile situation. So what, you know, here's a situation where I think Major League Baseball, to its credit, tried to deal with a problem. And it's created more problems.
I want, Steve, stand by. I want to turn. We've got joining us now Rafael Perez. He's the head of Major League Baseball's office in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. He joins us tonight from Scottsdale, Arizona. Good evening and welcome, Rafael Perez.
Hi, guys. How are you? How are you doing?
Very well. Thanks so much for joining us. And we're glad to have you. Major League Baseball has been taking something of a beating here this hour for the relationship that's grown up between American baseball and Latin America, particularly the Dominican Republic. Rafael Perez, is this a fundamentally exploitative relationship between the Major League Baseball Association and the kids, the young players coming out of and not making it out of the Dominican Republic?
I don't think you can kind of put in a way of exploitation. You know, those kids are giving opportunity to pursue a dream. Obviously, the office, when we opened the office in December of 2000, we had a lot of work to do, and definitely maybe the way that things were operating there were not the best one. But Steve Finerou and I think Professor Fielder knows very well of the work that we have been doing down there on fixing a lot of the problems. And I know that I heard the last part of talking about the Buscones. I respect the opinion of Steve in regard to the fact that now Buscones are complaining because the Major League Baseball clubs cannot pay the commission separate. But our belief was that because of the double dipping, that kind of played out in a way that wasn't healthy for everybody.
Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria, here's your man. Here's the Major League Baseball in the Dominican Republic, Rafael Perez. Your critique is the one on the op-ed page in the New York Times saying baseball must stop exploiting Latino talent. What's your question for the rep in Santo Domingo?
Well, I would ask him what he's doing specifically on the question of the Buscones I was mentioned before, but also what is being done. I'm very worried about the ones who don't make it. Has anyone ever done a survey to study what happens to the many players who try to pursue that dream, as Mr. Perez put it, and the dream doesn't come true? That is, those who go and play and train in the academies and then are released. What happened to all those kids? What did they get out of the experience of the years and that they put in? And what did they gain from it? I would be very interested to hear.
Rafael Perez, what about it? What about those who don't make it? And does Major League Baseball have an obligation of any sort to them or not?
Well, an obligation is depending on how you look at it. From the point of view that when a player signs a contract, they're giving a bonus. That bonus, you can look at it two ways. It's either the money for them to just throw it away, or it is the money that they need to use to save when that moment comes that they might not make it and the dreams come to an end. Most of the players, when they are released, unfortunately, they go back to society and they start working on different type of situations. No different than, or maybe better off to a certain extent, if they would have stayed and trying to pursue their careers, without playing baseball. Taking consideration that the issues that the players face in the Dominican Republic are direct consequences of the politics of the Dominican Republic. I mean, there is a lack of funding for education down there.
So you're saying don't look to us. We're just Major League Baseball. We're not the government of the Dominican Republic.
Well, because you have to differentiate. I mean, not everything can be blamed to the Dominican to Major League Baseball. I mean, there's a lot of issues that the government of the Dominican Republic has to take a look at and say, okay, first of all, are they providing good school to all the Dominican kids? I mean, in the States, for example, if you are a kid that have age to be in school, you cannot be going around the street. Dominican Republic doesn't incentive the player, the kids, to stay in school.
Well, it's quite a story when an industry as big as baseball has become rubs up against a country as small as the Dominican Republic. Rafael Perez, thank you for joining us tonight.
Okay.
Rafael Perez is head of the Major League Baseball office in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. Steve Fanero and David Fiddler, thanks to both of you for being with us. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Steve Fanero is with the Washington Post, sports writer there, and co-author of The Duke of Havana. David Fiddler, professor of law at Indiana University and co-author of Stealing Lives, The Globalization of Baseball, and the Tragic Story of Alexis Quiroz. And Roberto Gonzalez Echevarria, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure, Tom.
There you have it, the author of The Pride of Havana, A History of Cuban Baseball. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting corporate IT networks.